Get 3 months of The Spectator for just £3. Go to spectator.co.uk/trial.
Welcome to Holy Smoke, The Spectator's religion podcast. I'm Damian Thompson. This week I'm delighted to welcome back Edward Habsburg, otherwise known as Archduke Edward of Austria, who is Hungary's ambassador to the Holy See, and the author of a very popular, funny and wise book called The Habsburg Way, in which he tries to extrapolate some rules for living from the extraordinary history of his own family. But rather than just talk about his book, which has been a great success, I wanted to ask Edward just how he manages to conspicuously be so kind, understanding and morale-boosting on social media, which is where he has a big following. Because he's one of the kindest people on Twitter, and speaking as someone who's constantly involved in undignified conflagrations on that particular platform and in everyday life, I wondered if Edward Habsburg maybe had some rules for me. Edward, your book, The Habsburg Way, has absolutely fascinated people because of the amusing but very principled and loyal way in which you describe the history of your family, the enormously diverse, comprehensive, all-enveloping history of the Habsburg family, and extract from its history principles for living. And I know that many people will have read your book, you published it last year, but if we could just very quickly go through what those principles are.
Well, first of all, it's very kind of you to say, Damien. I set out by writing a history of my family. Then I realized that there are certain principles that we use since more or less 800 years. And then I found out that I think that they are relevant for people today. And that's how that book came about. So I sat down and I made a list, said what kind of principles would be the central principles of the Habsburg family. And of course, you would immediately, if I would ask you, what do you associate with Habsburg, apart from jaw, of course, you would probably associate Catholic. That's one of my chapters. You would associate family and children, because the Habsburgs were married and had lots of children. And that is, I think, a key trait of the family.
And you then are famously not related, or only very distantly related, to the poor people who had the genetic problem with the jaw.
Yes, that was 300 years ago. So a funny fact is that this genetic trait could possibly still be lying dormant in our genetic pool and might pop out again if we marry the wrong person. But we don't know what the wrong person is, so it doesn't really help.
Well, if they're called Habsburg, that might be a hint. Although Habsburgs do marry Habsburgs, don't they?
Damien, we're not into the cousin marrying business anymore. Although some people on Twitter have figured out that my wife is a very, very, but very distant cousin of mine, because she descends of Archduke John, who was the brother of my great-great-great-grandfather, Archduke Joseph of Hungary. So yes, in a way, we nearly can't get around marrying cousins, because many Catholic families are somehow cousins. But
I think it's true of all aristocratic families. Our beloved king does not have quite as many great-great-grandparents as other people do, but let's pass over that, because we adore him. Of course, the other day he addressed Parliament, not his words, of course, but those of the new Labour government. But something I hadn't realised just now, in fact, is that a Habsburg king has addressed Parliament. Did you know that?
Now you have me.
Well, I was thinking about Philip II, who married Queen Mary. He was King of England, and there was no such concept as a king consort. So he was given the title of King of England for the duration of Mary's life. His face appeared on coins, and he addressed Parliament. And indeed, he sat next to Queen Mary, albeit in a slightly lower position, rather, as the queen consort was. But in fact, there was no concept of
a king or queen consort at the time had not been spelled out, certainly not a king consort. And so he was technically King of England. We've already had a Habsburg king. And you didn't know that, and I've just told you, and I'm feeling rather pleased about that.
Damien, you just remembered me one of my most traumatic experiences of my childhood, which was whenever the history professor turned to me in class and said, but that's something that Mr. Habsburg surely knows more about. And of course I didn't. So yes, you got me there. I had a vague inkling in the back of my head that there was a connection between Philip II and England. I never realized that he spoke in Parliament.
How rude of him to address you as Mr. Habsburg. It's Archduke Habsburg, isn't it? What I didn't know until you told me, actually, I have to say, is that Archduke is a title reserved for the Habsburg family.
The nasty voices say that we invented that title in the 15th century, but we didn't invent it for our family. We found a document written by Caesar himself in our archives, where he bestowed that title upon us. And
I love to think of you guys sitting around thinking, what are we going to call ourselves? And then somebody says, hey, look what I found. Archduke. We like the sound of that.
Yes.
And I love the fact that you are Archduke Edward of Austria. And I'm going to, if you don't mind, because the book came out and has been widely read and admired, and it's something that's a particular relevance to Catholic audiences, but this is, as I keep saying, but keep slightly contradicting by my choice of topic, this isn't a Catholic podcast, it's about religion, but it's not a religious podcast as such, and many of our listeners are Anglicans or non-believers or Jewish or Muslims or what have you, and I'm very pleased about that. In your list of principles to live by, getting married is one of them, being Catholic is one of them, believing in the empire, and there's an interesting little footnote on whether the European Union embodies the principles of subsidiarity, which we needn't talk about, and I needn't float my theory that the ultimate exercise in subsidiarity was our decision to leave the administrative empire of the European Union a few years ago. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about what I think in many ways is your vision. You're a very nice person, if I may say so, Edward. And one of the things that comes across on Twitter is how nice you are and how kind you are to people. In many ways, your book is a recipe for how to live well and how to die well. But since I've been feeling rather morbid lately, as usual, let's skip over the how to die well and talk about how to live well. And bearing in mind that lots of our listeners are not Catholics, if we could sort of steer clear of the doctrinal aspect of it and talk about the little practical things. And something I notice is that you're quite prominent on Twitter, now X, and you achieve the extraordinary trick of being both prominent on it and always nice and funny at the same time. Now, I don't have as many followers as you remotely. I once had more than you and you've beaten me many years ago. And, you know, sometimes I get into quite prominent arguments there. Sometimes I make points that other people pick up. But the trick of always being nice and kind on Twitter eludes me, actually offline as well as online. And I wondered if I could ask you for some tips. How do you do it, Edward? Because sometimes people are mean to you.
Well, first of all, Damien, that's very kind what you say about my behavior on Twitter. I make a point of always being nice to people. Now, online at least. Now, doesn't mean that I don't get angry about things on Twitter. I don't really get angry about when people attack me on Habsburg jaw and inbreeding and these sort of things, because that's ridiculous. I mean, this is 300 years old stuff, and I'll play along for the good fun of it. But I have strong convictions. I have very, very strong convictions. And sometimes things make me sad, and sometimes things make me very angry. But I made a point of behaving online and of creating an atmosphere of wholesomeness around me, because I believe that by behaving that way, you will create a bubble of well-meaning people around you. There are quite a few out there that everybody likes. Perhaps one of the reasons why I'm always nice to everybody is because I'm not as witty as you are, Damien. You have an incredible gift of putting the spare through the most ridiculous part of what somebody else says And I think you also have a certain anger in you that is stronger than the anger that I have. And you can put it into words because you're a journalist.
It's called snark. And lots of journalists are rather snarky. And I always have been, unfortunately. And I think social media was really an appalling invention for somebody with my personality. So perhaps you, drawing on your own faith and your own kindness and the accumulated imperial wisdom of the centuries, could give me some advice on how to be nicer on Twitter. Because just today, I've been seething with rage over somebody who stabbed me in the back. I won't say who. I think they know who they are. I hope they know who they are. But somebody kind of stabbed me in the back on Twitter. And I've been getting cross about it. And also, I'm sorry to say, encouraging other people to get cross about it. Give me some advice, Edward. Make me nice on social media.
Oh, Damien, I think you're really very nice deep down inside.
Very deep down, maybe.
Well, for me, it's a bit easier because I have to be so incredibly careful. When I open my mouth, it's not only Ed speaking, it's a Habsburg speaking. So the entire family suffers if I behave like a fool. It's also the ambassador of Hungary to the Holy See speaking. So Hungary suffers if I open my mouth. I'm out there on my own. They allow me to do my own Twitter now X thing. But if I mess up, then this is on me. So I have several filters that I always lock on whenever my fingers move across the keyboard on my phone. And I sometimes could think of incredibly witty and sometimes even nasty things to say, but I simply tell myself, don't. It may be a bit of that Habsburg education. We've been, you know, the Habsburgs are different from other families in as they never had the luxury of having one country and then, attacking neighboring countries and enlarging the kingdom. But they always, from the beginning, had to keep together a mixture of different countries, different languages, different religions, different traditions, and keep them in peace together. That was from the 13th century on what we did. So I think a little bit of that is perhaps in my genes, a little bit of also being able to see the other side. What I also have is, I think it's also simply character. I have this kind of character. My wife is always angry with me because I don't get angry about things. I have a very strong phlegmatic side. And what I also do is I always try to see the best in other people. I am like Luke Skywalker when he says there is good in him about Darth Vader. I wouldn't say, what a horrible character, let's kill him. I would try to see the good in the other person. And I think that whole mixture is helpful. This is something you can train, you know, before you type something. You can try to see the good in the other person. I do this all the time. And you know what's funny? My idea is if you follow someone on Twitter, if you really follow the other person, you read their remarks during the day, but also at night when they make a little reaction to something, I think you can get quite a good idea of their character. Even if someone tries to hide on Twitter or tries to be a persona, you usually get how somebody is. And you discover that people that are your enemies in the ideological spectrum often are really, really nice people with many points where you can touch. It sounds very corny, but this is what I do.
And also you discover that some of your ideological friends are really horrible people. I've really tried to make friends with a couple of liberals, Catholic liberals, because I'm a very liberal myself on many subjects on Twitter, and sometimes it works. Very, very rarely does it work. But I think that's social media for you. Let me give you an illustration of how poisonous social media is. In an attempt to invite you to this Zoom meeting, I thought, well, I'm not sure I've got Edward's email. So I did a search and I found your email in my Gmail, and it said, unblock Edward Habsburg. And I thought, oh my God, I blocked the nicest man in Rome. How did I do that? Well, I know why I did it. I did it because in an entirely commendable and understandable effort to publicize your excellent book, you'd given an interview to a magazine I dislike, and I'm not going to mention what it is, and somebody I'm not very keen on. And I reacted by blocking you, God help me. And then I did see that I what actually happened was that you wrote to apologise to me for something that I'd done wrong, which was a completely intemperate and unfair reaction to you doing something completely appropriate. So that gave me that illustrated the difference between our personalities to me.
But Damien, listening to the last 2 minutes of you talking, you realize what a good man you are, because you realize you know exactly what you are, what you do. You're ashamed by the things that you do that afterwards you think are wrong. This is good. This is very, very good. What you're coping with is your character, is the way you react to the world. So, of course, I patiently waited, and then I got unblocked. It's like that. Some people need time off. And Damien, you asked me about how to live good. Mm. And you encouraged me to let the too Catholic stuff out of it. In fact, one of the reasons why I wrote this book is I gave a talk in Boston about 2 years ago. And the host told me, tell us about the principles of the Habsburg family, but don't be too Catholic, because many people in this room are not Catholic. So I looked, that was the birth of this book, because I began to look for the other things that were not Catholic among the Habsburg principles. And one topic that seems to fascinate and resonate, especially with my American viewers, is the topic that I call know who you are and live accordingly. The episode that you just asked me about, the moment when the Habsburgs discovered that they were archdukes, was a really dark moment in our history. In 1273, Rudolf became our first emperor. And just after him, the Habsburgs disappeared again. And for about 150 or nearly 200 years, they weren't part of the Prince Elector Club for the Holy Roman Emperor. So they groveled in Austria, in Vienna. But instead of just sitting around and being depressed, they began to work on their family mystique. They discovered ancestry that went back until Noah. They discovered a great title. They sort of remade themselves as something grand. And some people then ask me, so what do I do if I'm not the descendant of a great family? How do I create a mystique and ideals for myself? And I tell them, you don't have to be from a great family. You have to find out what really motivates you, what motivates you to greatness. And you have to build a set of ideas and principles around that. That may be beauty, that may be history, that may be charity, that may be helping other people, that may be art. There is so many things that you can do. And what I tell people then is, if you have a family and children, pass these values on to the next generation, but you can create them for yourself. The Habsburgs did that in the 15th century.
I think that's wonderful advice. I'm always struck by how some bits of the Christian message are easier to follow than others. For example, being nice to strangers isn't that difficult in my experience. I'm often, if I'm in the right mood, nice to strangers. It's not that difficult to go up your seat on the bus. It's not that difficult to donate to a charity. It's actually not that difficult for a politician, you know, to visit sick children in hospital. These things are not that difficult. I'm sorry if that sounds shocking, but they're not. Of course, we should do them. What's really difficult is turning the other cheek. What's really difficult is not reacting to people against or not holding grudges. At least for me, that's the difficult bit. Not reacting when people have a go at you, or if you think people have betrayed you, not casting them out of your life, not getting into rages, that sort of thing. That to me is far more difficult than showing kindness to a stranger. Do you understand what I mean?
I totally understand. I wanted to say two things to that. One of them, what you said, it's not difficult to make that nice gesture to someone you probably will never meet again. Or you were just, when I was a boy, I had a Jesuit confessor. He was also a brother of my grandfather. So I had a very good and friendly relationship. And he always spoke about, in German, it's the Fernstenliebe, the love not for your neighbor, but for the ones further away. It's easy to be nice to people that you will never meet again. What is far more difficult is to live with slights by people whom you let into your closeness, whom you let into your confidence. And these people can hurt you. If you read the Psalms in the Old Testament, there are so many Psalms where the psalmist says, if you would have been anyone, but you were someone who was my confidant, you were someone with whom I went into the temple to pray, and you treated me that badly. So it's a very, very old sentiment, and something that the Jews and the Christian and everyone who tries to get a grip on himself and be a better person has to fight far harder. It's more difficult to be charitable with people who are closer to you and who could wound you more easily than people who are far away.
I think one of the most difficult things is accepting sometimes that a friendship has died because of your own actions. I mean, there was a terrible case in my life, which I certainly won't give you any identifying details, but somebody with whom I was very good friends for a number of years, who showed me nothing but the most immense generosity. And then he started saying some things that I disagreed with, which certainly weren't in any way attacks on me. And it was a slightly tough time in my life, and I was abusing prescription drugs. I'm sorry to say, it was a long time ago. And I was so mean that the friendship died. And I have to accept that the friendship has died, even though the other person is perfectly generous in accepting my apology. These are the really difficult things, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They are. But there, we are not animals, and we can step across our shadow, and we can make step forwards. I'm really very, very confident in the greatness that is hidden in every one of us. And already knowing these things gives you a first handle to change something. There is a guy on Twitter, he's called Good Tweet Man. He's absolutely lovely, absolutely warm-hearted, and he always gets prayer requests and posts them for people to pray. That's the only thing he does. Everybody loves him. He spreads an incredible, wonderful atmosphere around him. He was then suddenly cancelled on Twitter for something he wrote, and everybody was sad about it. And I think this should be, we should spread as much as we can good cheers and hope around us. And everybody can do that with a bit of work. There's another guy who always makes pun. He calls himself Supreme Pontiff Jeff. And he only makes puns all the time. So anyway, I'm just saying Twitter is just an image for, we should try to give hope. But it's easier to give hope if you're yourself happy and in a nice settled situation, and not fighting with bills, and not fighting with disease, and not fighting with loneliness. It's easier if you have it nice. I have it nice. I have a wonderful wife. I have six children. I have a grandchild. I have a nice job. I'm very thankful for that. And I have my faith that sort of carries me and helps me to hobble through this life. It's much more difficult if you don't have it that easy. I know that exactly.
Well, I know it too. I mean, I'm not talking about myself, but I'm talking about other people. But I love your phrase, learn how to step across your shadow. Let's see if I can do it on Twitter. And if I don't, I will go back to what I tried earlier, which is just hand control of my account back to a really lovely person who would never let me tweet anything mean. What a challenge. I'm so grateful to you, Edward, for appearing on the podcast and for your friendship over the years. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, and all the best for your great work.